WNST, Taos of Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. I'm going to have these here, Betty Boop scratch-off tickets. I'm running a little short. I'm going to have to talk to John Martin about getting me some more of these. We're going to be all over the state of Maryland all summer long, but certainly all around Baltimore during April. We're going to be up at G&A Coney Island Hot Dog and White Marsh with my pal Andy in his new location. Also going to be at Greenmount Station out in Hampstead and putting together a day at the Chaucer in Highland Town, amongst other places. I've been waiting to get this guy on for a little while, and it's sort of weird coming in, flying in here, because I'm going to get some good tips. I'm going to be spending the part of next week, and you may be hearing this in the middle of the NFL owners meeting. So going down for, I guess I've probably gone to maybe 15, 18 owners meetings. I've missed the last couple because of the plague. I'm looking forward to get down to Palm Beach and talking about all sorts of things. But every time I go to an NFL owners meetings, the account ticks up, much like inflation itself. Kurt Bodenhausen has been covering franchise values, first at Forbes, now at Sportico, for a long, long time, and giving valuations and finding out just how much the young Angelos boys are going to put in their pockets when they head off into the sunset in Nashville. It's always a pleasure to welcome him back on. You can follow him out on Twitter at K Bodenhausen. That's B-A-D-E-N-H-A-U-S-E-N. For those of you watching out on our YouTube and the Baltimore Positive TV channel, always good to have you on, man. I learn a lot when you're around, and franchise values get thrown around all the time, and I'm like, you know, I'm going to find Kurt, find out what he's thinking about the pending sales of the Denver Broncos, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's a fascinating topic, because particularly in the NFL, you just don't see a lot of teams being bought and sold, because the business is so good. You've got all these long-term ownership groups. Average ownership tenure in the NFL is 40 years. The reality is these teams get bought and they almost never get sold.
Well, especially if they're bought by a young man, like a Daniel Snyder, a Steve Bisciotti, as opposed to what I've seen at a lot of owners' meetings with Mr. Benson over there and Pat Bowlen over there and the Maras and, you know, the families that are never going to sell. And then people like Jerry Jones that have been at this 30 years, because maybe he was younger than we thought when he bought it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Jerry was a renegade and upended the entire business model of the NFL. I mean, every owner should be thanking Jerry Jones right now, because not only what he did for TV revenue, but he totally changed the economic model. I mean, you go back to the days before Jerry Jones. I mean, the NFL controlled everything. And Jerry said, no, I'm going to sell sponsorships. And so we started selling sponsorships to a stadium to get around the NFL rules that didn't allow all the sponsorships. So he did a deal with Pepsi, did a deal with Nike, and the NFL sued him. He sued back and he won. And now look at how much sponsorship revenue these teams generate. And it's only going to go crazy with all the opportunities now in crypto and gambling that are out there. So the NFL has just opened up their crypto world to sponsorships. So you're going to see those companies pouring themselves in terms of sponsorship dollars into the NFL.
All I saw was crypto in LA and gambling in LA. I've been to 28 Super Bowls, Kurt. I set up on Radio Row, and all the people they tried to keep out the first 26 years were in, paying the most, seeing the most, being the most. And I came home and I said to my wife, I'm like, league's about to change here. That's why I'm going to the owners meetings this weekend, to try to figure it all out. You know, how Jimmy Haslam would take on $230 million of guaranteed money, how much that must piss off every other Eric DaCosta and Steve Bisciotti that needs to negotiate with every other Lamar Jackson and every other Josh Allen and every other player that's going to come down. The business of sports has changed dramatically during the plague in many, many ways. I mean, baseball's problems, very well documented. But boy, the NFL, spending time, I mean, oh, there's Mr. Kraft. Putin's got his ring. And last I checked that I was at an owner's meeting, he was at a Chinese whack house about a mile away, right across the strip here. And it's unbelievable how Teflon-y, I guess that's an old Don Meredith line, right? Teflon-y in regard to how the ownership is, where Dan Snyder will be sunning himself at the pool at the Breakers this weekend as though all of the stuff that happened to all the women in his organization never happened. It really is amazing that they're too big to fail to some degree.
It really is true. I mean, they are the ultimate Teflon league. Everything just falls off of them. I mean, you look at the ratings this year, as the rest of the TV landscape is just absolutely crumbling. people can't get enough of the NFL. They're immune to almost everything. And the pandemic has just accelerated all of these business trends, whether you're talking about streaming, crypto, gambling, and it's to the benefit of the NFL almost in every case. I mean, you look at what's going to happen over the next couple of years. New TV deals are going to kick in 2023. Each team's going to get a check for $400 million, basically.
Whoa, $400 million. I checked the payroll. It's $208.
Yeah, exactly. So it gives you an idea. I mean, you got to be an idiot to not make a profit of at least $150 million. The good teams are going to be making $250, $300 million in profit. And the Cowboys then are just in a whole nother universe beyond that. And so it's an incredible economic system that the owners have in place with the cap and how big the TV money is. And so that's why
Buffalo's got the best deal now. Hold on, I got to interrupt you, because when you're talking about, privatizing and socializing and who's going to pay the bill, I said to myself, if I live in Montauk, I'm buying the Buffalo Bills Stadium. That's kind of an unbelievable thought, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've moved away from this. If you look at the stadiums that have been built in recent years, whether it's the Rams or going back to MetLife with the Giants and Jets, public money's been gone out the window. That old model of build us our stadium or we might move. It's what the Minnesota Vikings basically did when there wasn't a team in L.A. They threatened to go to L.A. Minnesota taxpayers foot the bill on that stadium. But the NFL's moved away from that because they make so much money. And for the Pagulas to be able to pull this off is unbelievable. Multi-billion-dollar ownership family, but before they bought the Bills, and to get the taxpayers of New York State to fund this is really unbelievable.
Governor wants to be reelected in the western side of the state. And it really is amazing how important the Bills are to the community, that politically she'll get reelected by getting this done and 14 million people in New York City won't care.
Yeah. 100%. The Bills are an institution in upstate New York. The last thing the NFL wants also, I'm sure the NFL has had conversations. The last thing the NFL with the state, the last thing the NFL wants is any sort of threats of Buffalo moving out of upstate New York and going to Toronto or anywhere else, because they are, an important part of upstate New York. They can't imagine. I mean, the Pagulas are so invested in Buffalo between owning the hockey team, owning the football team. It would be a very tricky dance if they were to actually try and move the Bills out of Buffalo.
Yeah, I thought of Jerry Jones, by the way, when I was sitting in the upper deck, the marijuana was wafting up in the second half after halftime, all over. And ponds over here and marble over there and Inglewood right here. It really is amazing seeing that facility and seeing the will of all of this, right? I go to these owners meetings going on two decades. You mentioned public money and private money. Dude, I'm Baltimore, man. I mean, all of my childhood at the paper, chasing down the dream that became the Ravens, thinking we would never get a football team here now. And it's a little strange. I'll go to these owners meetings and, I know Steve Bisciotti's not going to own this team forever, which probably is at the heart of my phone call to you. And by the way, Kurt Bodenhausen here from Sportico, longtime at Forbes, and has written probably more extensively than anybody else literally in the world about franchise values and the NFL. But literally, that would be you. You'll be humble, and that's fine. So the Bisciotti thing is interesting. His kids aren't involved. He's less involved by a lot. He's never around. He's missed games. He's been down in Florida in the Bahamas. He's got grandkids. There was always a thought that the exit was going to be to sell the team. The plan that he had coming in was this soft thing with Art. Art got to hang around for a couple of years. He bought in at about $575 million. And there were times where we're like, well, he could sell it for $1.5 billion. Somebody said to me a couple of weeks ago, they're like, he might get $2 billion for it. And I'm like, oh, you're under a rock. Like, I'm thinking, and this was a smart person that, like, I'm like, your math off by 50%. Tell me where we are in this, because these things haven't sold. They don't sell much. To your point, it is a long-term strategic play for all of these guys for taxes, write-offs, what their kids are going to get. We've seen the Jack Kent Cook thing happen where, you know, his family lost control of the team. We've seen the mess out in Oakland and Las Vegas. It's always messy when these things happen. Steve got into this thing, honestly, now over two decades ago. So he's 20 years into this. What are the Ravens worth?
We value the Ravens $3.1 billion. And so, again, the Ravens have a lot of boxes. I mean, you talk about an East Coast team and that is very accessible to a lot of billionaires, whether you're talking about New York Metro, Philadelphia, Washington. It's very accessible for a lot of really wealthy people. And you look at some of the other teams along the East Coast, the Patriots aren't coming up for sale. The Jets, you hear rumors of the Jets coming up for sale, but the Giants aren't being sold. The Eagles aren't being sold. The Commanders, who've been trying to sell them.
The league's been trying to get that sold for 10. I mean, that's its own story as to how hard it is to move a franchise, because I mean, they pushed that guy in LA off the side of a cliff. The NBA did when they could, right? And they pushed Mr. Richardson off the side of a cliff when he had his issues. This has been, I mean, they thought they had him out, right? They thought there was going to be enough money. He doesn't really have a price, right? His price is prison, death, or I'm not moving, clearly, right?
People, when everything was unfolding, when I thought the worst was unfolding with this club, people were circling when the minority owners were suing Dan and everybody was looking for more transparency in what was going on there. People were circling the team, and I mean, very rich people were ready to cut a check. I mean, they wanted that team badly, but he held on to it and somehow has been able to withstand it. We'll see, you know, if Congress gets more involved or somehow, but he has put up an incredible fight to hold on to that team. And I wouldn't bet against Dan Snyder holding off. So there aren't a lot of options. And people are all watching the Denver Broncos. We value the Broncos $3.8 billion. How many rich people out there? With the NFL ownership rules, that's the only hindrance in terms of how high these prices can go. There's no private equity allowed. There's a debt limit of within a transaction up to $1 billion. One person
has the ultimate country club, literally, right? It's the ultimate country club.
Yeah. And one person has to pay up at least 30% of the equity. So that's a big check to write. And it's not even realistic. You're going to have to own more than 30%, because to go out and raise that much money in limited partnership isn't really realistic. This isn't writing a check, you know, oh, come in, write me a check for 20 million, 50 million.
No, you're asking, but if your cash flow is 250 million a year in profit, it's insane, right? It makes it a lot smarter. And from everyone I've ever talked to on the inside, probably including you, really smart people would say, do you know the tax benefits Peter Angelos has had just by owning? Like, the reason to stay in is because you can hide money, shelter money, write off. There's an incredible benefit, not just to being that wealthy, because I think we get all, but there are loopholes and things available that only owning a franchise like this affords you.
For that majority owner, absolutely. You hit it 100% on the head. I mean, you write down the entire purchase of the price, basically. So I buy the team for, say, the Broncos sell for $4 billion. Almost that entire thing is an intangible asset. These teams don't have any real tangible assets. I mean, I got some equipment lying around the stadium, but for the most part, the tax laws allow you for any transaction to write down intangible assets. So if somebody pays $4 billion for the Broncos, they're going to be able to write down more than $200 million of income that they have across any of their businesses. So somebody who's got a huge portfolio and it's kicking off $200 million of income every year and dividends and capital gains, write down the whole thing. And so Steve Ballmer wrote down almost the entire purchase price of the LA Clippers for $2 billion. It's an incredible tax advantage if you're that majority owner.
And now he bought the LA Clippers, who stink, who've always stunk, who'll always be the second banana, and he's made a fortune. He's has no regrets about sitting courtside there, right? Literally, when you buy into these things, there is no more 1973, I own the Indians, I can't make it, I'm the Seattle Pilots, I'm the ABA, I'm the little sister in the NHL. Maybe the NHL, I mean, the NHL, I don't know where the money is for the Arizona Coyotes, but some franchises like the Tampa Bay Lightning is like an institution when I go down there now. Like, some of these things have exploded in a way that you would have said, who would bet on hockey in Tampa or in Nashville or these other places? Atlanta didn't work, right? I mean, there's places it doesn't work, but life is good when you own an NBA franchise in Oklahoma City, right? No matter what.
Oh, no matter what. I mean, the NFL is at the top of the pecking order and the NBA is right below it because of the global opportunity, owning 1/30th of that business. And small market teams have been able to be successful, often when they're the only team in town. So you're talking about Oklahoma City, Portland's had an incredible run. Utah Jazz sold for almost $1.7 billion. And then when you get down to baseball, for the most part, all of them, outside of a few franchises, are in incredible shape. And so your profits are determined based on what you want to do with your payroll from year to year. And then the NHL definitely has some of their problem markets, but the NHL is in some way there's value in the NHL because you can get it at a lower entry price. And the NHL has a lot of the same advantages moving forward that all these other sports leagues have, whether it's in gambling, whether it's in streaming. And so at a much more affordable price, you know, would you rather buy one of these? Would you rather buy an MLS club for $600 million or an NHL team? What do you want to own for the next 10 years? A lot of people would rather park their money in the NHL. So the business of sports team ownership in the U.S. is phenomenal right now. You compare it to European soccer clubs, where the economic model is basically broken. You've got teams spending. The top teams are spending to compete against each other on a global scale.
Well, that's interesting, too, because their ass will get relegated.
Right.
And period.
The teams at the bottom have to spend because they're fearful of getting relegated. Because once you get relegated, your revenue drops 90%. I mean, could you imagine how U.S. sports leagues would operate if you were going to potentially get sent down to AAA in baseball and your revenue drops 90%?
Brother, this brings me right to, you know, it's almost like you segued me. It's almost like we do this together. Kurt Bottenhausen joining us here from Sportico. Dude, I'm at an event the other night. My phone goes off and it's a buddy of mine. And the text says, "Dear God." And I thought, did Putin drop a bomb? You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, and I look, and I'm going to share this graphic with you so that you, because I think you know these numbers because you're smart like that. But I shared this out on my timeline literally last night, and I looked at this, and you know, it was right in the wheelhouse of. I can't believe I had 67 comments. There are still people that are on Putin's side. There are still people that think I've been too hard on Mr. Angelo, Kurt. But they're $5 million below what the worst teams are spending on payroll. The money is rolling in. What's the national TV contract in baseball, Kurt?
It's about $2 billion a year. Teams are splitting up.
Okay, so right off the bat, they're spending $30 million on payroll total. And to your point, there is no relegation. They just had a Players Association fight that took 100 days and didn't correct the problem here, which is, I don't know where the exit is here, bro. Do you? There's no crystal ball for this. Shout out to Tommy Shaw and Sticks on that one. But I've been doing this 30 years, and I don't know where the bottom is for what Major League Baseball would accept for its own partners, how Peter has behaved. Peter's eating pudding off in a cave somewhere. We don't know where he is. John's got his boots on and zooms in from Nashville. Nashville would like to have a baseball team. Just ask Tim McGraw and Garth Brooks and the rest of them. We happen to have one here. It's sort of this self-fulfilling prophecy that I saw in Major League in the movie 30 years ago, where the owner's trying to get to Miami and guts the TV network, which they did. They're not traveling their TV network. The guys calling the games on TV can't see when the ball goes up in the air. Dude, it's an unbelievable thing. But if this team winds up in Nashville 5 years ago, we'll all scratch our head and say, oh, that's what the prick in St. Louis did to the football team. He was local until he wasn't anymore. And he took a check for, you tell me what a franchise in Nashville would be worth functioning in downtown with a new stadium in 2026. And then I'll tell you whatever the Baltimore Orioles will be at Camden Yards in a 35-year-old stadium. And I'm smarter than that, Kurt. I watched the Colts leave. I know what we had to do to get back. People just think the Orioles are never going anywhere because they have a pretty ballpark. I think there'd be a cat fight, but I think if the Angelos is lawyered up, imagine that, the Angelos is lawyering up, that they would do anything that Mark Davis did. They would do anything that anybody else would do if it meant them holding on to the team and having a $4 billion franchise instead of a $1.5 billion franchise.
Yeah. Major League Baseball would fight them very hard. We haven't seen relocation in baseball in a long time. Going back to the Expos messiness, where the team's ownership all shuffled between the Marlins, Expos, Red Sox, everybody, you know.
Dude, when you go back to how illicit all of that was with Lurie and moving, but not just that, the fact that they like played seasons in San Juan and moved the team and barnstormed the team and then wound up coming and Peter took all the money. You know, I mean, that's the amazing thing. They moved the team here and Peter just took all the, he's going to die with all the money. Now, whether they ever get, the learners ever get theirs or not, it's unbelievable having watched this over the last 17 years that they've siphoned all this money from the TV network and they're just no speaking anymore. And they're still a part of the club. I can't imagine when John goes to the owners meetings and owes this guy $300 million. Yeah. It's an amazing thing. It really is.
You've had a front row seat to that, which has been one of the Hatfield and McCoy situations. It is incredible. I mean, Major League Baseball has been trying to solve it for, a decade now, the battle between those two.
And now there's no money left. To your point, like the regional sports networks are, the money's evaporated. It's in the bank. It's gone. And now it would come out of a sale price from my understanding, because John doesn't have $300 million to stroke a check, or at least the appearance is that. I don't know where the bottom is, but for baseball, they haven't fixed their problem, which is this franchise is a mess. The city's a mess. There's all of that going on, and there's places that are going to want teams, right? I mean, Nashville wants a baseball team at some point.
Nashville does. Portland. There is a list of people. And that graphic you put up there, I mean, look, it's, the Dodgers are spending 9x what the Orioles are this year. I mean, that's
out of whack.
Crazy. I mean, that's, you know, the Mets are 8x. I mean, that's, they're not playing the same game. I mean, that doesn't exist. I mean, the NFL, the delta in the NFL is, you know, when, if you look over a multi-year time, because signing bonuses can make it a little screwy from year to year. But if you look at spending over a five-year period in the NFL, everybody's kind of the same. I mean, everybody spends to the cap and, that's
well, not the Bengals, but, you know, they did all right.
The Bengals, they can't escape that cheapskate reputation, but they're starting to spend their
money. Let me kick them in the nuts while they're in the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, let me talk a little trash. We got to go beat this kid the next 5 years.
I know. When you look at the NFL, I mean, there's three NFL stadiums without a naming rights partner. Soldier Field, Lambeau, and then Paul Brown Stadium. They aren't necessarily trying to generate as much money as they can. But baseball, yeah, the CBA didn't do anything to fix the tanking problem. I mean, the players wanted a totally different system, and we get a lottery for the number one pick. I mean, come on. I mean, this is ridiculous.
It's sort of the original sin of 1995 that they went to war, cost the World Series. And, you know, I was on the air. I was 5 years into Mike, and we had no football here. There was no thought that the Ravens would ever exist, that the league would ever let a team in Baltimore, quite frankly, being near Washington. And all of that at that time, I said, you know, the Orioles were spending more than anybody. They had money. The Blue Jays had money. They were kicking the Yankees ass. The Red Sox were a joke at that time. And I said, the idea is making a fair fight, whether it's a wrestling match, whether it's a battle of the bands, you know, whether it's pinochle, you want a fair fight. And this thing's gotten so off the track. But when you talk to these myopic people, they'll give you some stats that the Orioles made the playoffs 6 years ago, and that's good enough. And, you know, bad teams win, and look at Tampa. We're going to do the Tampa plan. We're going to do the Astro way, minus the banging of the trash cans and wiring the players. It's unbelievable that we're into this, and Baltimore, right? Like, this is a storied place that I don't know where the bottom becomes, because it really is a leadership issue to say who's running these places and who's making these decisions. And that's why I'm going to the NFL owners meetings this weekend. Kurt Bodenhausen is here from Sportico. Last thing for you, because I want to go back to the Broncos and the Ravens and get to the Broncos sale is going to set the level. And it's amazing, dude. Like, when I brought you on, I thought their number was 3.4 and you're giving me 3.8. Inflation hits sports too, and the amount of money they're making and can make is going up, and this is happening quickly, right? I mean, we're looking at $5 and $6 billion franchises if Bisciotti hangs out another 8-10 years, right?
Yeah, I mean, what is Jerry? People ask Jerry Jones, what would you sell for? $10 billion? I would have to start at $10 billion. I mean, we've reached. Well, it's fascinating watching these two things unfold with the Broncos and Chelsea happening at the same time. It gives you an idea which do you want. Similar bidders in both places. And do you want to own a global franchise where the economic model isn't so great and you might lose money every single year? Or do you want to buy a very US-centric sports brand where you're going to make a couple $100 million every single year and you're the king of the town within the United States, but very limited.
Oh, Roger has his designs this weekend on a European division in Frankfurt. They're going to put a team at Tottenham. Come on, you know they're going to do that. They're going to do it.
I've been hearing the NFL.
It's a shitty idea, but so is the San Diego Chargers moving to Compton. You know what I mean? But they did it.
I think the NFL. You'll see the NFL start to adjust. And the question with the NFL is, do they care about the value of the franchises? Because it's only set by teams when they're being sold and aren't staying in the club. And, you know, the NFL doesn't have to worry about private equity money coming in because they're making so much money. All these other leagues have had to open things up to private equity money partly because of losses over the last couple of years and minority owners wanting to get out. The NFL, when minority stakes come up for sale, the majority owner just takes it. Goes, I'll buy it. I want more. I want more of the profits that are coming in every year. We'll see what.
Well, you wouldn't buy it as a minority owner now without it's a stake to own it, right? I mean, the Bisciotti play here would be the next play. Steve would identify a guy and say, "You can have it in 2026. Give me $1 billion now, and you know we'll see.
Oh, yeah, I'll meet you close." Small stakes, you know, the 2%, 5% guys, right, who want to get out, and that's what private equity is snapping up all those in the other leagues when they can, because they see.
Well, Peter had 13 partners in Baltimore, and allegedly Peter bought them all out. Peter went to every Pam Shriver, Jim McKay. I mean, I've been told face to face by all them, they sold their shares back to Peter. But if it hadn't been Peter, it would have been someone else like Smith on the other side of the Redskins deal trying to get the deal, right?
Yeah. I don't think the Orioles are going any. I mean, never say never, but I think with that market, again, being an East Coast team, somebody's going to come in and say, I'm going to turn this around. I can make this the prestige of the brand, despite how much it's been damaged over the last two decades, is still one of those historical teams in the same way that the Washington Commanders are. I mean, they have that history, as at least as the Redskins. And I think that makes them attractive. We'll see how the Broncos unfolds. It's a question of how many more rich people are. You know, in the NFL, there's that limit where it's only a U.S. audience that's bidding on this. Nobody outside the United States is going to bid on an NFL football team.
So no Russians want to get involved like in the NBA or anything, or the Chinese, right?
No. The NBA, when in a big market NBA team, when that goes up for sale, there's global bidders. Same thing that's happening with Chelsea right now. Who want to be in London. That's not the case with the NFL. That said, rich people, very rich people, a lot of very rich people are still going to bid on the Broncos. And so whether that means the price ends up at 3.5, 4, 4.5, I don't know. But the franchise valuations just continue to appreciate year after year. Buffalo Bills, arguably the least valuable franchise. Spagula has bought it for $1.4 billion. Now we have him at 2-1, I think, and only 5 or 6 years later. So you're seeing franchise valuations accelerate. But there is a split between those big market teams and small market teams because people there's more of a premium than we've ever seen on those big market teams. It started with Steve Ballmer. If you think about the Ballmer thing in the NBA, though, he paid $2 billion for 2014. 3 years earlier, you had the 76ers, similar situation in that they were just going to be a tenant in the building. They sold for $287 million. I mean, so it's like...
You and I could have put that together.
Right. I look back on it. And now we value the 76ers at 2-3, 2-4. And so it's the NBA and starting with Ballmer and then the way the labor deals sorted out there and then the TV deals have made those incredibly valuable asset where 10 years ago, you had a lot of NBA teams losing money. Now, unless you go crazy on your payroll and have to pay a massive luxury tax, everybody's profitable.
I love when Kurt Bodenhausen reassures me like Marty Conway does and everyone else that the Orioles are going nowhere. They're never leaving. It's all good. And I'm thinking, well, whoever comes in will spend more than $30 million bucks on payroll. So, you know, at least somebody new would at least be trying, you know, so we'd have that. Kurt, always a pleasure to catch up with you, man. I appreciate you making the move over to Sportico and making the move back here and looking us in the eye on the Zoom for the first time. And I really appreciate the visit. You're a great follow and we'll continue to follow along as the highest bidders come in to buy the Broncos and Chelsea. And we'll see what happens next down the line. At some point, they're going to wind up in front of Congress. The NFL guys, right? At some point, somebody's going to pull a card on them and pull them in.
We'll see. Love what you do, Nestor. Thanks.
Appreciate you, Kurt. Hey, man, you got it, man. I'm Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. Getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery and our friends at Goodwill Industries back out on the road all month long. Meanwhile, follow my act from the NFL Owners Meetings out on social media, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat, all those places. We are BaltimorePositive.com.